Lots of people exercise inside during the winter. Actually, I do mine outside. I all winter long.
Good for you.
Even in snow.
Good for you.
Good
That's
for you.
Great.
It's the hardy Wisconsin folk.
I tell you what, it's always a lot of fun. Larry Mueller here. Those voices you heard belong to Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And they joined us every month to talk about physical therapy kinds of issues. And they always invite you to join in with your own questions or comments. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lori, great to see you again.
It is good to be here. What a gorgeous day.
I know. Jill.
I think last week I was running in full-on winter gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then this weekend in shorts.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's
a bad
wonderful.
Idea, though, because it was too hot. I wasn't prepared.
A lot of people weren't. It was the temperature, that rapid temperature change. If you're not used to acclimatizing to the weather, it can be really tricky. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, it's, you know, the first nice weekend we've had, everybody wants to be outside. And of course, a lot of people think, oh, well, I've been exercising all winter. I can mm-hmm. easily make that transition to outside. And if you change your sport or your activity as you make that transition, you can end up pretty sore. I actually straw polled my students today, my doctoral physical therapy students today, and said, how many of you are sore from doing things over the weekend that you haven't done for a long time? And about half of them raised their hands. And one of them said, I play indoor soccer 3 times a week during the winter, and I am so sore from from golfing.
Because
of the rotation.
Right.
And I remember when you golfed in our golf open, and you were so sore the next day. How many swings did you take in that?
I got my money's worth.
Okay.
It was a lot.
Yes, boy.
Yeah, so all that, it's just a different activity. You're using different muscle groups in different ways. So even if you happen to be using the same muscle groups, your quads or your calves or your glutes or something, you may be using them in a different range, at a different speed, and a different action. And that uses new muscle fibers. That'll make you sore.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything to do about it? I mean, you're just going to be sore.
Well, don't do what half my PT students did and go gung-ho. You got to kind of ease into it. So, you know, the analogy I always give people who come in with shoulder pathology, for example, is would you run a marathon without training? And they say, oh my goodness, no. Today is the Boston Marathon, by the way.
Yeah.
And I'll say, but you just went and you raked your yard for mm-hmm. 6 hours. And for your shoulder, that's like running a marathon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing is when the weather is beautiful like this and you just want to be out in it to take breaks or change the activity that you do is really key.
So if you're in your garden and you're pulling weeds or you're pulling out the dead stuff from last year, you know, do that for a few minutes and then maybe stand up and do something the other direction, work on a bush or work in a tree, trimming a tree or carrying something or take some of those sticks and carry them. Just use a different posture.
Right, exactly.
So those are things to do. I know even my daughter, who's, you know, plays, you know, she's in sports all year round now. She had her first outdoor track. And I know they were running 400s and I think an 800, and mm-hmm. she was doing long jump.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Sunday. She was...
Oh, yeah.
A little sore.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, my kids played soccer. And, they play soccer year-round. They train all winter long. And they had 2 games. And they had played the weekend before in a tournament. So they had games. But they were miserable after their game on
Saturday because of the heat.
And I said, your body is not, your thermoregulatory system isn't ready for that. And even if you drink, your system can't metabolize as fast as you lose it in the heat.
Right. And kids have a harder time with it than adults as well. Mm-hmm. So you factor that into the equation.
Right.
It makes it really hard for kids. And I think people forget that a lot.
Yeah, it's their weight to surface area ratio.
Yep.
Well, Ruth in Milton has a question for you. So let's go to her. Ruth, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. Last month, you were advising someone with plantar fasciitis not to use the boot type night splint that's kind of hard on your hip and knee, and I have been using one well, a year ago now. I had physical therapy all during last summer, and that's the boot. And last month you said that's not a desirable one.
Well, that it's a personal preference. So it's really a personal preference. Many people use that. It's a splint that goes behind your ankle, so your foot kind of rests and sits down in it, versus there's a splint that goes over the top of your foot. And for some people, the having that pressure on the back of the hard plastic on the back of their heel all night long is uncomfortable. Plus, you have to strap it on pretty tight to keep your heel back down into the splint. Some people find it perfectly fine. Others find it uncomfortable. So I wanted people to know that there were options, that there were different styles. And so you didn't just click on the first one that you saw on Amazon.com.
Where do I find that front?
They're called dorsal splints.
Dorsal.
D-O-R-S-A-L. And I'm guessing anywhere that carries the other splint would also carry a dorsal splint.
Yeah. When I bought mine, I just Googled it.
This boot one that was that they suggested for me that I did get was Bird and Cronin, but I really would like to not, you know, switch from that boot type.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a little, the dorsal splints are a little, I would say, less cumbersome, and that's part of the reason I like it as well.
Yeah, it's a lower profile. Yep. So.
So if you go online, you're going to find it. Or if you stop at a pharmacy?
They might.
I don't know.
I would start with dorsal splint for plantar fasciitis. Yeah. And that would
go
do
from there.
You bet.
Yep.
There you go, Ruth. Thanks a lot for calling. Elizabeth in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure thing.
First time caller. Long time listener. Say, gals, I have neuropathy in my feet. I'm 63, and I've had this for like 2 years now, and it's really painful. It feels like, you know, shooting, burning stuff, and then in addition, they're numb. Like it's like I'm walking on bubble wrap.
Yeah.
And my doctor's got me on gabapentin.
Okay, good.
But and I'm taking 750 milligrams spread out 3 times a day.
Okay.
I mean, for a total of.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, I can't tell the difference when I have the gabapentin. And I was just wondering if there might be some exercises or something that I can do to relieve this. Because one of the jobs I have is I'm one of the carousel operators at Ellisdale.
Oh, fun.
It's a riot.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm standing a lot. And when I get home and I take my shoes off, my feet just feel like they are elephant size.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't look any different. They just feel
pain. Yeah. And unfortunately, there is not a lot that we do for the neuropathy. There's not much that we can offer in terms of physical therapy. The way we intervene for most people in neuropathy is to give them a place where they can exercise so that they can maintain their overall health. Sometimes people with neuropathy have diabetes and they need to exercise regularly to maintain their health and their blood sugar levels and their circulation.
I don't have diabetes.
Yeah. Excellent. So that's in your favor. So, you know, so we recommend getting in a pool for exercise so you don't have all the weight on your feet.
Okay.
So you unweight and we go, you know, we give people a variety of exercises they can do in the pool. But then we talk a lot about footwear so that your feet are comfortable in your shoes, particularly if you're standing. We recommend that you move around more rather than static stand.
And if you can
alternate standing and sitting. So it's mostly lifestyle advice that we give.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I would agree. If they can even let you sit every once in a while when you're running
the
carousel, great. Great.
Yeah,
and
I,
just
and
do
I
some
can.
Walking. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really have any specific exercises that are going to improve your neuropathy.
Right.
But it's per se.
Yeah.
All right. But it was a great question.
Well, thank
you. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bruce in Wells up next. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
I got a question. I'm type 2 diabetic, and a couple years ago I started working out 3 days a week. I'm down 52 pounds.
That's excellent.
Woohoo!
And what I wanted to know is I've got this, I had the spare tire. That's what a dally. And but now I've got all that loose skin. How do you tighten up that skin? What can you do to alleviate it? I mean, it's...
Right. So that's a great question. And a lot of people who do lose excessive weight, that's one of their kind of complaints or concerns, is they have just kind of excessive skin, if you will. And it's virtually, once the elastin in that skin is somewhat stretched out, it's very difficult to kind of bring that back in. I know some people who, once they reach their goal weight, will actually see a plastic surgeon and see if they can have some of it removed, because it can impede your activity.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's probably exactly. Physical therapy, unfortunately, won't be able to help with the skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it sounds like you're doing great with your weight loss.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
That's the most important thing, and that's wonderful.
Well, I have a question. Somebody told me that through massage therapy or whatever, they can go in there and they massage it, whatever, they break it down, and it makes it easier to tighten it up, I guess. Is that true? Is that just a wise tale?
No.
I don't know.
I mean, there are physical therapists who do manual therapy. Typically, for physical therapists who do manual therapy, it's to loosen taut connective tissue. So, for example, if in your back or in your abdomen or your core you have some really tight fascial tissue that's limiting your movement and causing pain, a physical therapist will go in and do some manual therapy with that fascia to try to loosen and break it up so you can move better, but not to tighten it.
Right.
And so pregnant women, mm-hmm, or women, yeah, after they have a,
mm-hmm,
baby.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah, would you like to see it?
Not at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's a radio show, Jill.
But it's only
9 months.
Yeah.
And second of all, the women are young.
Yes.
Where your connective tissue still has more elasticity. So
okay,
if you've had that weight for many years and you're older,
yeah,
it's harder.
Well,
that
and diabetic sense. Circulation
diabetic,
is compromised.
So, yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So.
Bruce, thanks. Appreciate the call. Chris in Pewaukee will turn to you next. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. For one of my most recent tricks, I slammed into a wall last Wednesday evening and broke my shoulder.
Oh, God.
What bone did you break?
Well, it's a small bone that shattered in three little pieces. I could see it on the X-ray, but it caused the humerus to drop out of the socket.
Oh, so you dislocated your shoulder, too.
So
yeah,
it was a glenoid?
Yeah.
Was it a glenoid fracture?
That sounds right.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm not in the house, otherwise I'd look it up on my paperwork.
That's okay.
So my question is, I see the doctor in about another week and a half, and he said then we would decide about surgery. So at this, mm-hmm, point, of course, that's not in my plan.
Of course.
No.
But my question is more about afterward, whether I have surgery or not, physical therapy.
Absolutely.
Can I go to a physical therapist and have them give me some exercises and do it on my own? My coverage for that kind of thing, unfortunately, is not too great. I know I could incur a lot of expense.
Sure. Can I ask how old you are?
Yes, I'm 64.
Okay. All right. And the reason I ask is because you had a traumatic injury that dislocated your shoulder, and the rate of recurrence of how often,
yeah,
you dislocate your shoulder again goes down as we age. So from that perspective, you know, your risk of re-dislocating, yeah, your shoulder again is really, really low, which is great news for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're going to be very, very compliant,
yeah,
and do your exercises in a very well-designed rehab program, you could,
yeah,
probably see a therapist weekly for a few weeks and kind of get,
okay,
on your merry way.
Yeah, it depends, okay, upon how it depends upon a number of factors.
Sure.
In your case, so if you have a glenoid fracture, that's the socket for the ball and socket, and if you have a disruption of your articular cartilage there, it could lead to some progressive arthritis and things like that. So you would want to make sure that you are progressing the way you should so that you don't have long-term consequences from this fracture.
Yes, I have fibromyalgia, osteo, and rheumatoid already.
Oh.
And so I really, to me, it's kind of a,
oh, yeah,
foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be flip about that by,
yeah,
any means, because it hurts like,
yeah,
a thumb.
Yeah, I'd say that cluster of comorbidities might predispose you to adhesive capsulitis, potentially.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a loss of motion in your shoulder.
Yeah.
So just make sure your shoulder doesn't get stiff. So that you'd want to see the physical therapist to make sure that you're gaining your motion at a rate that's appropriate for the injury and surgery.
Okay. Could I ask just one other quick question because this wasn't addressed?
Okay.
When I fell, something at the top of my rib cage on the left, underneath the breast area, popped. It popped right back. I felt instantly better. Any idea what that might be?
Hmm. Well, it could have been your where your ribs come in and attach at your chondral bone. It could have been just a little like subluxation of a rib.
Okay.
That force could definitely have done that.
Yeah,
sure. Right. So,
yeah.
And it's not broken. I'm not concerned about that. I'm having no breathing problems.
Great.
Yeah,
that's good.
So it's farther down. It's not up by your collarbone.
Right. That's okay. Correct.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah,
all right.
Way down.
Okay.
Way down.
All right. Yeah.
I thank you very much. I listen to you every single time you're on. And Larry, I've been a listener for years, and it's the first time I've called, so I'm grateful.
Well, it's nice. Chris, it's the first time you've needed to.
Exactly.
That's really good.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today as we take a look at physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will be talking to a journalist based in New York about how the presidential primary in that state is shaping up. That's at 1. Right now, though, taking a look at physical therapy issues with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. Great to have them with us. And we have one open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, titled The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Darlene in Viola next. Hi, Darlene.
Yes, hello. I have a recommendation for the woman who called earlier with the neuropathy in her feet.
Yeah.
The product is called Benfotiamine. It's a vitamin B1 derivative. There has been medical research on this that it has helped people with neuropathies. Most medical doctors are not familiar with different types of supplements and nutraceuticals that are out on the market. So I would encourage this woman to do her research and to try it. There are no side effects, but she does want to do her own research.
And it's called, what was it again?
Benfotiamine, just the way it sounds. Mm. It's a vitamin B1 derivative.
Okay.
Well, that's very helpful to know, and it sounds like Darlene did a really good job doing her research. And the one thing that we always encourage people to do is if they do take a nutraceutical or a vitamin supplement or an herbal supplement of such, that they make sure they check with their physician or their pharmacist that it doesn't negatively interact with any of their current prescription medication.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another good point.
And the quality of vitamins and nutraceuticals is quite variable. They're not FDA regulated. And so, you know, there's been a large amount of research looking at the actual composition of some of the nutraceuticals, and they don't always match the claims on the bottle. So
do your research, in other words.
Right.
Just
yep,
as
yep,
Darlene says.
Darlene
exactly
said,
right.
Do your research.
Exactly, right.
Exactly.
Thanks, Darlene. Appreciate the call. Janelle and Hilbert, it's your turn next. Hi, Janelle.
I have recently been diagnosed with deteriorating pubic symphysis.
Symphysis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the only physical therapy my chiro could suggest for me is Kegel exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any other recommendations for like a physical therapy on that?
Tell me what it is first.
Pubic symphysis pain. It sounds like you probably have maybe what's called degenerative changes there. Just like any joint, you can develop a little bit of arthritis there. And it is the joint right where your pubic bones come together.
Right.
So those big ring bones that are pelvis, right where they come together in the front is our symphysis pubis.
Right. And it can be quite painful.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, they will do cortisone injections there.
Yes, they will.
If you're up for that.
Yeah.
But there are physical therapists who specialize in pelvic floor pain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what they will do is they will examine your pelvic floor, the musculature, just like if you had knee pain or back pain and you might have an imbalance in some of your muscles. You may have some tight muscles. You may have some weak muscles. You may have a postural imbalance. You could have a leg length that is shifting your pubic symphysis.
Okay.
So the pelvic floor physical therapists look at you through the lens of your pelvic floor and how it impacts the loads that you bear at your pubic symphysis. And they will give you different exercises to do to address that. So I would see a pelvic floor physical therapist.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Randy in Sauk County up next. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. I was quite ill a number of years ago with a number of problems from diabetes and this and that, and it was due to weight. And I was fortunate enough, my doctor referred me down to the university there to a project. And I'm just now, after a number of years, about 10 pounds shy of having lost 200 pounds.
That's amazing. That's
a
person.
And so I met with the exercise physiologist there and, of course, the dietitians, and just got trained myself to completely relearn living, actually. And could not have possibly done it otherwise.
Absolutely.
And so I, you know, whenever they talk about cutting programs, cutting the University of Wisconsin, you know, the medical intervention that they can help people with all over, you know, is really, don't, you know, public, don't do that. give those people anything they want.
Anyway, thank you, Randy.
There's a specialist. A couple years ago, the specialist that I had worked with down there on this project, which they were involved with endocrine problems and so on, started to recommend to me that I really, he was afraid my navel cavity would let loose because I had pounds of extra skin.
Oh, sure. Oh.
And so there's a specialist, the reason I'm telling you this, there's a specialist over at Transformations, UW Transformations, mm-hmm. that really deals with that particular problem well.
Nice.
That's great to know.
And he's well known for it and so on. I don't know. Do you want me to tell you his
name? Sure.
I think that would be grand.
Yeah. His name's Rao, Venkat Rao. He's very talented at dealing with that. There's actually a number of health problems that can come from that skin hanging down.
Especially if you have diabetes.
Exactly.
Right.
It's a huge risk. And, you know, I finally my personal physician and the specialist were saying, you know, you really need to get this taken care of. And I did my research, too, and found that he is right there at the UW. So for anybody that...
Thank you, Randy.
Yeah, you
That's
bet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, and I like what Randy said about how he had to transform his life or make a whole lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very hard to do that by yourself. But now it sounds like he's completely on the right track and he's
That's
managing.
That's wonderful,
it's
isn't
a
it?
Great, great story.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Bruce is still listening and got that name.
Exactly.
Tim and Madison up next. Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Great. Thank you. I started to notice this pain in my elbow when I was riding the bike last year, and now as I get the bike out again, a road bike, where you're a little bit hunched over. And I have it in both elbows, right on the inside, and you can kind of feel it right on the bone. And my doctor referred to it, I believe, as golfer's elbow.
Yep.
So you're bike riding, and you're out kind of hunched over for an hour to 2 hours, and it's right on the inside of the elbow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know what I love about your story is it's just the classic of, well, I stopped doing the activity and then it was fine, but as soon as I started back, there it was. So to me, that's the importance of addressing the issue of getting on the strengthening program, getting on the program to modify how you do things, meeting with an expert to say, let's handle this before next season, because as soon as you start back, boom, whether it's your Achilles or your knee or your golfer's elbow.
Right, exactly. And golfer's elbow is classically kind of medial epicondylitis or epicondalgia. So it is pain on that medial side. And I guess, Tim, what I would think about, I don't know, have you had your bike fit for you? Because my concern isn't so much about you being hunched over as your wrist position.
You know, I have had it fit, but maybe it's, I don't think I've grown, but maybe it's time to have it just looked at again because the pain just kind of started to come
yeah.
after.
Right.
Well, definitely.
Well, Go ahead.
Well, that's okay. So looking at it through the lens of, I have pain in the inside of my elbows. So it may be something about your anatomy that even though the bike was fit properly according to standards, because of you and your body type and now you have some elbow pain, they may need to adjust it to accommodate for that and shift your load some.
Right. It may be that you lost flexibility somewhere else in the last few years and now your elbow's taking more load.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then I would see a physical therapist to get on an intervention program.
Absolutely.
For this. There's pretty straightforward treatments for this from a physical therapy perspective. So I would get in to see a PT in your area and get it handled, you know, before the weather gets any nicer.
Exactly. Yeah, the other thing is you have to remember is biking like that is weight bearing, and if he doesn't do any other weight bearing activity, that's a factor that gets thrown in there as well.
Right. So. Right. Exactly.
There you go, Tim. Thanks. Carissa emailed to say she broke her elbow in October, just recovering from the removal of the hardware for the brake. She would like some advice for getting back into biking. Should she use a compression sleeve, maybe a stationary bike first?
Those are all great questions. And the elbow is a very tight, congruent joint, so you have to be a little careful about things. I think starting on a stationary bike to see how her arm tolerates the loading is an excellent, excellent idea. She can wear a compression garment if she feels better. Some people, it actually causes more irritation of the nerves, so it kind of depends upon her swelling. So she probably wants to start on the stationary bike and try with or without the compression garment before she goes out and actually does biking where she's, you know,
right,
20 miles from home and has to turn around and come back.
Right, exactly, because she's going to have the issues of weight bearing on her hands. Mm-hmm. She's going to have gripping. She's going to have gear changes and all those things that involve it. Plus, she's going to have the vibration of the road. Fractures don't like vibration. And the variables of having to look for traffic and maybe make sudden moves. So let's let her elbow accommodate to the weight bearing first, make sure it can handle that piece of it so it has enough latitude to deal with the other things you're going to demand of it.
Gary in Menasha, it is your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have two things here. How do I find the correct physical therapist to address these wild spasms I have at the back of my skull, right at the bottom of the skull, and the spine and that part of my body? I need help because a year and a half ago, I slipped out of bed and gave myself the jaw hinge damage. And then 4 weeks ago, I was exercising here and I fell over backwards and split open the other side of the head.
Oh.
And so I am getting these unbelievable, every once in a while, unbelievable. There's no words to describe that pain. There's just none. And I am looking for a way to loosen that up. And there's just as an aside, for the neuropathy in the feet, I'm not a diabetic, but I have PVD quite severely, and I've developed a neuropathy in two toes on each foot, and I find that MagnaLife DB, and that is the commercial name for it, is a pain-relieving foot cream for diabetics, although I'm not a diabetic yet, and I hope I never am, but I try to watch it. But that itself, it's MagnaLife, and it's available in the diabetic sections of the average drugstore.
Mm. Well, that's good to know.
I'm looking for that physical therapist,
sure,
a specialized one, and how do I find the right one? There are a million of them out there, or that's an old
sure thing. Yeah, no, understood.
Sure, right. And you're from Menasha. So up in that area, there's quite a few probably outpatient orthopedic physical therapy clinics. First of all, if you saw a physician for this, they may be able to refer you to a group.
Right. I would see someone who is a spine specialist.
Correct.
And preferably someone who is an orthopedic clinical specialist, so they have a special certification in orthopedic physical therapy. And even further beyond that, if you can find someone who specializes in something like cervicogenic headaches or cervical pain, So that's where I'd start, and I'd just start making some phone calls. You know,
exactly.
The local outpatient clinics. You know, here in Madison, we have a spine clinic, so it's pretty easy to track down the spine PTs.
The other thing you can do is you can go to the Wisconsin Physical Therapy Association website.
WPTA.org.
Correct. And it can help you find a physical therapist in your region that way. Mm-hmm. I think it also has them listed by specialties as well.
Okay. OCS. Yeah, that could be.
So that's a good place to go to.
And then beyond that, I would be asking the question about why you're falling. And it may be the PVD and the neuropathy in your feet, but you need to talk to somebody about what you need to do to prevent falling. If you've not been in a falls prevention program, you should do that as well. Otherwise, you're going to keep having, you know, this, that, and the other thing. You're going to end up with a fracture or something like that. One of these times you take a spill, Jerry.
And to go along with that, Sarah and Gaze Mills emailed in earlier to say that before making an appointment with a physical or occupational therapist, you'd be best to contact your insurance provider to find out if your doctor can give his or her verbal permission for the therapy, or if you must have a face-to-face appointment for the permission. If it's the face-to-face appointment, you will be charged for that appointment plus the therapy.
Yeah, so in the state of Wisconsin, physical therapists have what we call direct access. In other words, a patient can come in and see a physical therapist without a physician's referral. However, some insurance companies will not pay for physical therapy unless there is a physician's referral on board. If you call a physical therapy clinic, they should be able to tell you that. My husband is in a private practice, and those are some of the phone calls they get, and mm-hmm. his personnel can help field that. So that's a great point.
Yeah, clinical staff, the appointment desk staff, when someone calls up and says, this is my insurance, they can look up and they can tell you need a physician's referral. Or sometimes they can see the patient for one visit, mm-hmm. and then the physical therapy clinic will contact the physician's office and give them the information and obtain the referral at that point in time. So there's a lot of different variations of that. So if you just call the clinic.
Yeah. But that's a great point. It is something, as a consumer, you need to know.
Yeah.
And thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call, Jerry. Sarah in Sun Prairie is up next. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about an injury in the hand and the wrist and the thumb. And I guess my basic question is a physical therapist appropriate for that? It happened a while ago, but now it's still sore. Back in January, after I had made several airline trips and was dragging my suitcase behind me and then carrying a carry-on that didn't have wheels and everything, I think that's the origin of this, although I didn't notice that anything was a problem. But as soon as I got home from the last trip, I was cooking in the kitchen, and I don't remember exactly what I picked up, either a heavy dish or it very well could have been my cast iron frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you grip that. And I felt this sudden kind of pain, mm-hmm. and I knew I had done something mm-hmm. to my hand. I thought it was my wrist.
Mm-hmm. So it's on the thumb side of your wrist?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And
okay.
it's my left hand.
Right.
Yeah. And it was the weekend. So I did the thing where I iced and I, you know, all that business.
All right.
And then it seemed to be a little better. And a bunch of years ago, I sprained my other wrist, and the physical therapist, who I liked very much, had given me some exercises. And I got them out, and apparently it was the wrong thing to do, because what I did was I put my hands into the basin of warm water and gently went round and round. And then it hurt way more.
Right. It sounds like what you have this time is different from the sprain. This sounds like what we would call a Duchenne vein tenosynovitis.
Okay, so what happened was, so then I went to the primary, and I wasn't in terrible pain, but it was obvious that it was injured. And he sort of did a little bit of bending, a little, does this hurt, does that hurt? And then said, well, I think he said do an MRI or something.
So, Sarah, are you talking about this injury or your previous one?
This one.
All right. So, you know, in answer to your question, yes, a PT could help you with this. It's a fairly straightforward tendinopathy in your wrist. It involves the muscles that move your thumb. So it's on the thumb side of your wrist, and they cross your wrist. And so anytime you move your thumb or engage your thumb, especially if you're gripping something, it hurts.
And the cast iron skillet is a classic example. You wrap your thumb around the top and you have this very long lever and you go to lift it up, and those small tendons that help stabilize if they're flared up will definitely irritate it. So yes, a physical therapist or an occupational therapist who specializes in hands is a great strategy. There are certified hand therapists who can be either a PT or an OT, and they'd be great to see. Some people get a little splint that they use to kind of help immobilize until the tendinopathy calms down a little bit.
Yep. But there's a lot of interventions out there that a physical therapist or occupational therapist could help you with.
Absolutely.
And there'd be plenty in the – she's from Sun Prairie.
Yeah, there's plenty in the area.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Good luck.
I think it'll definitely help.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today, as we take a look at physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at what's ailing you today. Physical therapy issues with Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at the University of Wisconsin. And we have two open lines. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us as well at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Eric in Ellsworth up next. Eric, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm going to be 62 on Friday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. 35 years ago, I had a bicycle accident and dislocated my clavicle. It pulled it out of the sternum and out of the shoulder joint.
Wow.
Ouch.
And then that had healed, but it was always somewhat, I always had rotator cuff issues. And about eight weeks ago, I was skiing and I fell, and I didn't really fall on the shoulder, but I jammed something and I hurt that shoulder again. And it feels very similar to the rotator cuff injury. And I got probably 3 or 4 weeks of physical therapy, and then I've had 3 weeks of acupuncture, and I'm wondering how long, when do I have to, if it's not significantly better, when do I need to go see, I guess, an orthopedist or somebody about additional.
Well, that's a great question. And it sounds like you've done everything appropriate to manage it thus far. So then I always ask myself, is there an emergent surgery that you are a candidate for, need that is very time restrictive? And I would say the reality of it is no, there's not. So, you know, you probably have some arthritis in that shoulder from the previous trauma, and then falling on it again, maybe perhaps flared it up a little bit. 4 weeks of PT is great.
But it's just a start.
Yeah. Our surgeons will say, wait for it. And acupuncture is great too. I like everything you're doing. But I would say you should give it at least a couple more months before you go see someone.
So that being said, are you getting better? Yeah. Or are you as bad as day one?
No. I have full range of motion. If I manually assist when I get, there's certain places where the muscles are still, I'm assuming, torn or something is really, really tender. But, you know, if I manually rotate my arm, I've got full range of motion. So that, you know, nothing is messed up to the point where, you know, I would need like emergency surgery.
Okay. Well, you know, so I asked myself, what does the physician have to offer? You know, probably the next thing would be a cortisone injection.
Exactly.
If you're plateauing, you know, you've made improvement, but you can't get off the plateau. You've given it time. You've gone back to see the physical therapist to advance your exercises, because how you were at day one or week four is probably not where you're at week 10 or 12. And if you've done all those things and you just can't get off the plateau, then you might think about a cortisone injection to see if that can get you off the plateau to the next level. So that's the time where I would say, maybe I'll see somebody and see if they have anything else to offer.
Okay.
All right.
And that's kind of what I was wondering about, you know, how long should I go? Should I?
But right.
And I guess that rotator cuff is one of those slow healing.
It is.
Yeah.
It is slow healing, and as long as you're able to do the things you want to do, you can delay the cortisone injection until,
absolutely,
you know, it's not going to cause any undue harm to not get a cortisone injection sooner.
Right.
And thanks again for calling, Eric. Appreciate your call. Desiree emailed to say her son has been seeing a PT for 2 months for poor posture, anterior pelvic tilt, lumbar hyperlordosis.
Yes.
And core weakness. Stronger, but continues to stand with his belly and bottom sticking out. Mm-hmm. What else can she do?
Well, I guess I wonder how old her son is, but, you know, the classic is using what you've been taught. So if he's been taught how to improve his posture without that big lordosis, and that lordosis is when you have that big curve in your low back and then your stomach protrudes a little out the front and your tush out the back, that's a hyperlordosis. So my guess is the PT has been working with him to engage his lower abdominals and his core muscles and his glutes to straighten out that lordosis some. So you can be really, really strong, but if you don't use it, then your posture doesn't change. So part of it is that cue to remember to engage your core. So one of the things you can do is you can put it on cue. So in the teenage world, you can
put it on their phone.
Put it on their phone, and have it beep every, you know, 15 minutes and have them check their posture. Are you engaging your core? Are you standing up straight? Are you doing whatever? So usually it's a matter of habit.
Right, exactly. So in the situation where I work with athletes for the UW, I had an athlete who I caught her because she thought she was doing a really good job with the posture. I caught her in between practice bouts of her sport standing there exactly like you described. So in the athletic training room, she'd have her great posture. And she told me, she goes, I'm just not really getting better. And by golly, I went and I observed volleyball practice. And in between reps, there she stood with her butt out and her belly out. And mm-hmm. and so it hadn't become a permanent change in her behavior yet. So I had to cue her and remind her, said, I never thought about that. So it just takes a long time to kind of retrain your brain that is the new normal posture.
Right. So it's not just when you're doing your PT exercises
right.
that you have good posture. The idea is to carry it over into everyday life.
Steve in Waterloo has something for us. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Great show today. I guess we're doing rotator cuff show today.
Okay.
That's fine.
I have a question. I have a tear, according to my one doctor, a full tear in the front and a partial tear in the rear, in the back of the shoulder.
So a supraspinatus, infraspinatus, do those words sound right?
They sound right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I on my left side, which is where the injury is, I have about maybe two-thirds motion that I have on my right side. I talked to two different doctors. The original doctor suggested, one, you're 68 years old. You're not going to work again. It's not causing you a whole lot of grief. A lot of people your age have rotator cuff
yes.
issues. If we repair it, you're going to have a lot of physical therapy, a long recovery, and you could go out next month and tear it again.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And the other physician said, oh, I can have you up and going. He made me sound like I was going to be 20 years old again in like 3 months.
Well, too bad that you don't have a 20-year-old rotator cuff.
Yeah,
I know. It's terrible. But anyway, I'm living with this thing, and I'm living pretty comfortably. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I've slept a little wonky, or I forget that it's there and I reach too high.
Yep.
But for the most part, but it, you know, I'm almost at the point where I think I can live with it, and I don't want to go through surgery. So you're kind of my third opinion.
Oh, we're the rubber match. Is that what that's called? Yeah. Or the deal breaker?
Rubber match?
What's that?
Yeah,
rubber,
right,
match?
Rubber match.
The rubber
breaking
match.
The tie.
What's a rubber match?
You're breaking the tie.
We're breaking the tie.
Yeah,
so,
tiebreaker.
So I will tell. I will. Well, there's two of us here, and I don't know if Lori will agree with me or not, but I'm speaking first because I'm the younger child.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so who has the more wisdom?
Oh, yeah. So. Wisdom. Wait,
okay, never mind.
Age
go ahead.
Before beauty? I don't know.
No,
anyways,
go ahead.
But I would tell you that I think you're doing everything exactly right. I would not have my rotator cuff repaired at this point. I would keep doing what you're doing, be really good and diligent about your rehab. And if the pain increases to the point where it does become unbearable, what you probably need more than anything after an injection would be a debridement where they just kind of clean up the joint and not a rotator cuff repair.
Okay.
So let me ask you this. Did you have a recent acute injury?
No, this was about 3 years ago.
Okay.
I had the cortisone shot. The cortisone shot did not do anything.
Yeah. No, enough said. If you told me I had a perfect shoulder until 2 months ago when I fell off my roof and maybe had an acute tear of a relatively pristine rotator cuff, you might be able to sway me. But if this is 3 years old, this is a degenerative tear, and it'd probably be like sewing spaghetti back together.
Mm-hmm. Or two melted sticks of butter.
There you go.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
All right. Good luck, Steve. Keep working on it. Okay, keep getting it strong. It'll continue to get better.
You know, it's interesting talking about rotator cuffs is the prevalence of rotator cuff tears, whether they're degenerative or acute, particularly as we age, is getting to be so high that more and more literature says it's a natural age-related
change.
Occurrence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sally and Madison up next. Hi, Sally.
Hello, and thank you so much for taking my call. Last week, my husband was closing the back door on a van, and the door didn't hold, and it slipped, so he reached up to grab it, and he pulled a muscle in his back, I think, because at first it travels around his back and sort of his diaphragm, too, I think. And after having spent the week applying Icy Hot to his back and getting him to put ice packs on every so often, he still has the same amount of pain. Any suggestions on what to do or what not to do?
So my guess is he was standing and he arched backwards to catch
exactly
it?
Exactly right.
Okay, and the pain stays in his trunk. It doesn't go into his butt or down his leg?
Nope.
Okay, all right.
How old is he?
71.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, is it as bad as it was on Friday?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
But it seems to travel more, radiate more, I would say. I can't tell for sure.
Okay. Does he have any other medical conditions?
None.
Okay. And generally otherwise healthy, fit?
Yep. Even now he's out for his 45-minute walk.
Okay.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. You know, I'd have him do some stretching, like knees to chest kind of stretching.
Oh, sure.
And another good thing to do, I would have him lay on his back with his knees bent and his feet flat and take his knees side to side. Mm-hmm. So just do some nice, gentle rotational stretching.
Yeah.
Oh.
So try some of that easy stuff like that. It, you know, there he could have had, you know, a moderate injury. You know, chances are if he was bending backwards, he compressed some of the little joints in his back called the facet joints. And those are little synovial joints, just like every other joint in your body. So it'd be kind of like for your knees, if you jump down, you know, off of a few steps and land on them, you kind of crunch your knees. He might have kind of crunched those little facet joints in his back. So I do a little bit of knees to chest and some little bit of hamstring stretching, maybe on his back with his hand behind his knees and straighten his leg out, little knees side to side, like Jill said. And if he's not turning the corner and getting better in the next 4 or 5 days, he could go in and see somebody.
Yeah.
But even going out for his walk and increasing blood flow and circulation is
gonna
perfect.
Help.
It's
going to
be
absolutely
really good.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we want to hear, is that people are kind of keeping their activity kind of within their pain tolerance. We don't want people to be completely immobilized. So that's great for him.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot for calling, Sally. Appreciate your call. And Jackie and Madison, have you got something for us? Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I recently went to a shoulder doc here in town who was great. He said that I have need a total replacement if gone. Mm-hmm. And he referred me to another doc in town through the UW system. And I have a couple of questions. I don't want to waste the doctor's time when I go. So I have a couple questions that I'd like to ask. I'll give you the quick history. I'm 71. It is a second, it would be a second surgery. The first one was not, I'm not even sure I'm saying it, it was not at laparoscopy. It was an actual cut.
So it was an open procedure.
Yeah, open repair.
And I have at this point bicep tricep strength, but they showed me the x-ray and that round bone is sitting up against the other bone, whatever. Yep. Yeah. And he also told my other shoulder was more than likely shot.
Okay.
So my questions for the doc are, time for recovery, time before I drive. Mm-hmm. Will it get worse if I put it off for a year?
Mm-hmm.
Will he, with permission, let me talk to one or two of his prior surgeries and how many has he done? And I guess that's it.
I think those are great questions. The other thing would be if you could speak with a physical therapist to which he or she refers to, and you can ask them a little bit more about kind of their expected outcomes or how long the recovery takes. A physical therapist would be able to answer those questions for you. And the other thing is, prehab.
Oh,
that's what I was going to say. Prehab is always a really good thing, too. If you do delay it, which you talked about, if you did a lot of strengthening between now and then, would that be helpful? I guess the other thing I would ask is if you're going to do a total shoulder or a reverse total shoulder. Do you know exactly what the plan is? Oh.
I think we may have we lost her.
Okay. All right.
We'll think, ponder that some more. We need to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. And then we will be back with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. They'll be with us right up till 12:30 here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. We're talking physical therapy today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer for UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Great to have them along. Thanks for joining us, and I think we'll have one caller just before our news break. Jackie was talking, and I know, Jill, you wanted to follow up with one thing about her shoulder.
Right. Well, she was going in to see her doctor about having a total joint replacement for her shoulder and had a list of questions to ask the physician, which is fantastic. That's a great strategy to use. I think everything she talked about was very appropriate. One of the things I mentioned right before the break is you can have a total shoulder arthroplasty where they basically put in joints that mimic your current joints, or there's a new procedure out there specifically successful in patients who have massive rotator cuff tears. And what they do is they still put in two parts of the joint, but they switch which side is the ball and which side is the golf tee. So it's called a reverse total shoulder, and the outcomes are very, very good. And so I was just curious if Jackie was going to have a total shoulder or a reverse total shoulder based on the fact that she had a rotator cuff arthropathy.
Would there have been any difference in the questions she'd have asked?
Nope, no.
Same things?
There's only one minor restriction in the first 4 to 6 weeks if you have a reverse total shoulder. And kind of the rule of thumb is you should always be able to see your elbow. So you just can't really stick your hand in your back pocket for those first 4 to 6 weeks. But other than that, the questions are perfect.
Oh, yep. Perfect.
And one of the questions about any joint replacement that she brought up is what happens if I wait?
Yes.
And
yes.
That's a great question to ask. And in general, the surgeons like to say, you need to have this done when the bad days outweigh the good days, and that's the time to have it done. That being said, there might be a couple things such as, you're losing more motion and you can't move as well. And then you start to aggravate adjacent joints and things like that. So there are those kinds of things to look at. But in general, they kind of put it back in the patient's lap and say, when you've had enough with dealing with this, then it's time. But that's a great question to ask.
Don in Warren, Illinois, up next. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hi, WPR, where I get my ideas. I called in to you ladies last fall and said I had spinal stenosis lower lumbar, and you told me that muscle tone was part of it, and I should get weightless exercise, like in a pool.
Yep.
Well, we're out in the boondocks, and that's impractical. So I kicked it around a while, and finally decided I bought a used tilt bed. And my JP said, go pretty easy on that. So I got on it, and after about 3 weeks, I started to see results, and man, I was going good. I could walk without my cane, without the pain down the back of my legs. And the bad news, I have my teeth removed, and I got a dry socket, and it got away on me, and I got out of the bed and out of my exercise routine about 10 days. And I'm farther back now than I was before. So I'm starting back into it. Have I got a chance to recover to where I was?
Oh, I think so. You know, people often have setbacks. And, you know, sometimes people will come in and they'll say, I went on a long trip and I got back and my back was so painful and they took these x-rays and I have stenosis and this and that. Well, you know, that stenosis didn't just show up last week when you took your trip. That stenosis has been there. So, you know, in the absence of some sort of major trauma or a lot of time, nothing has changed markedly in your back. So you should be able to get back to where you were before. You just have to do it gradually.
Right, I agree. I mean, you said you slowly took 3 weeks the first time, and this time it may take 3 weeks or a little longer, but I think you paced yourself appropriately last time, and I think you can get there.
Good luck, Don. Thank you very much for calling.
I'm glad that worked for him.
Don't give up. No, yeah. For sure. Cheryl and Cecil up next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Yes, I was diagnosed about a year ago by my primary care physician as having fibromyalgia.
Okay.
And I had my hip and my right hip and down to the knee was so sore I could hardly walk. They ended up giving me pain pills and sending me to a PT, which I did. And it did get better, but it always hurts. And then now this year in the spring, I seem to have gotten it in the other leg and in the knee. And right now their answer is more painkillers and PT again. And I'm wondering, is this the answer?
Well, this is the pattern that, you know, if you look at the research on fibromyalgia, the number one intervention that seems to work is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there. If you think of exercise, it occurs along a very large continuum from very light and very minimal exercise to those people who run marathons. So it occurs along a continuum. Then the question is, where do you jump in on that continuum? Many people, particularly those with some sort of a medical diagnosis, need to start on the rehabilitation end with a physical therapist who can examine them, look at their body, help them figure out which are the right exercises for them to kind of get them moving along that continuum. Then at some point, you transition into wellness, and that is you may join a gym, you may join an exercise class in a pool, you may do a regular walking routine with some of your friends, whatever it is for wellness, to self-manage those symptoms. So, you know, the answer is yes, exercise is the intervention. Seeing a physical therapist to help you figure out, given your current signs, symptoms, complaints, new problem, what are the right exercises for you to get you back on that train that will lead you to wellness, you know, yes, that's the answer.
Agreed.
Now, I guess I'm questioning the diagnosis even. I wonder if there's somewhere I should go for a second opinion to see if it's something else.
Well, fibromyalgia is a diagnosis of exclusion. So, go ahead.
Yeah, and sometimes people make that diagnosis when they're not sure what else to call it. So, again, if you see a physical therapist, you know, sometimes the idea is to say, you know, let's set the fibromyalgia diagnosis aside and let's look at my hip and my leg and my knee and let's look for a mechanical cause for this pain. That's not fibromyalgia. So I understand your frustration with that diagnosis, and I think at times it's given too freely when we can't find another immediate cause for your signs and symptoms. But given that this happened on the other side last year, I'd want someone to look at it and look for a mechanical cause for that pain and not necessarily attribute it to this diagnosis.
I agree.
There we go.
Exactly.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Cheryl, Sue and Sobieski, your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Larry. Can the doctors explain frozen shoulder, please? I've been diagnosed with that a few years ago, and I don't quite understand it.
Sure. I'm happy to explain that. So frozen shoulder or adhesive capsulitis is when the capsule, the ball and socket joints sit kind of in a balloon. And that balloon, for whatever reason, it's usually kicked off by an inflammatory process, decides to get very sticky and tacky on the inside and starts to adhere to itself. And you can experience a significant loss of motion, range of motion, accompanied by pain. And there's basically three phases. There's a freezing stage where you're in a significant amount of pain. There's a frozen stage where your pain is less, but your shoulder's really stiff. And then the third phase is the thawing phase where you actually kind of regain your mobility. Some people go through those three phases relatively quickly. Some people it can take up to a year and a half to go through all three phases.
I think the average is 18 months.
Yep.
So
okay. It's a long haul.
Yep. Yeah. And so are you, you said this was a few years ago. Where are you at on that continuum?
Well, I was trying to figure that out as you were describing it. Sometimes, though, if there's a sharp pain, it almost feels like there's a pin being stuck in my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Real odd thing. But so, I'm not worried about this. I'm just
with it. How much motion do you have in your shoulder?
I have a fair amount.
Okay.
Pretty good amount.
You can get your hand behind your head and behind your back.
Yep.
You can hook your bra.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I wouldn't call that frozen shoulder.
I call her the end of frozen shoulder.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're kind
awesome.
Of... Yeah. Yes, very much. Now, I will tell you that a lot of people do have a slight loss of range of motion at the end of their frozen shoulder. But like you, it doesn't affect their activities. So they can still get behind their back and things like that. So it may not look perfectly even compared to the other side, but you'll still function okay.
Do you know what caused it in the first place?
No.
Are you diabetic?
No.
Okay.
Well,
I'm in pretty good health.
Great.
Okay.
I'm 70.
Okay. Well, there is a fairly significant... bilaterality,
a
predisposition to have it on the other side. So just be on the watch for that.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Sue. Appreciate your call. And Sandy in La Crosse up next. Hi, Sandy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a piriformis problem, which started last fall with pretty severe pain, so I couldn't even walk. I am a 65-year-old runner. Or I was hoping to get back into it soon. I had physical therapy in the fall and some dry needling, which helped that right away. But then I had pain that kind of wrapped around the leg into the groin and the hip flexors and adductors, I think.
Okay.
So, and it seems now it went away over the winter. I did cross-country skiing all winter with no pain. Now that I'm out hiking and trying to run a little bit, it's coming back. I can feel it in the piriformis. And then when I stretch, I feel it in that inner part. So it almost feels like the stretching is causing the inner thigh part. So is there a stretch? And I've tried all kinds of stretches. Which one should I avoid and which one can I use to... keep that piriformis loose, but avoid the groin pain.
So, when you were in PT last fall, did they examine your hip? Have you had radiographs of your hip joint?
I did, yes.
And what did they say?
No problems with.
Okay, all right.
That they saw.
Okay, all right. You know What comes to mind is it could be an underlying labral issue, so that when you get to end range, stretching your piriformis, you're annoying something intra-articular. Stuff inside your hip joint tends to refer to your groin. So, you know, not knowing, if the PT examined it and looked at your hip adductor muscles, your groin muscles, and looked at your hip flexor muscles and determined that they were not the cause of the problem, then I would start looking inside the joint and wondering if there was, again, you have a labrum inside your joint that's not unlike the meniscus in your knee. And if you're a runner, you can get some degenerative changes there that wouldn't show up on a radiograph. And it could be that when you get yourself in that externally rotated end range position to stretch your piriformis, you're aggravating something inside your joint.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I would probably go back to the PT that you saw last fall and have them work with you to find a way to stretch and work on that, and wonder if the reason your piriformis stuff is coming back isn't because of something going on inside your hip joint, that may be a little bit of traction at your hip joint or some hip joint mobilization might be the underlying intervention rather than just stretching for the muscles around it.
Oh, okay.
Right. And the other thing is not only looking at the hip, but actually looking at the sacrum as well, because your piriformis attaches to your sacrum. And if you have some sort of torsion within your sacrum or a little twist, that can be constantly loading the piriformis. And so sometimes mobilizing your sacrum will do the trick as well. So you got to kind of think about where the piriformis itself originates and inserts. And then I also agree with Lori's idea about possible labral issue. You know, when you compare skiing to running and hiking, the hip goes through so much more motion with running and hiking than it does through skiing, which makes me wonder if
that's
positive.
An impact. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the impact.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, I will try to get back in. Should I not run?
Can you run without pain?
I can, but then if I, like I say, then if I start stretching because I feel just a tightness there and I don't want the pain to come back, then it comes.
You know, we love to have people stretch, but maybe not stretching is the
that
key.
Aggressively.
Shorten up your stride.
Right.
Shorten up your stride and stay on a softer surface like a trail and see how you do.
Right.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Sally posted on Facebook that her 12-year-old has a ganglion cyst. It's bothering him when he does push-ups and uses a keyboard. Is there a PT solution or is surgery the best option?
Jill, didn't you have a ganglion? Didn't we hit it with a Bible?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
And I have another one.
Oh.
Right there.
Oh, indeed you do.
I'm sorry our listeners can't see that.
Yeah.
But yes, ganglion cysts are not uncommon. They're typically on the back of the hand, and it's a kind of a fluid-filled sac, if you will, usually along a tendinous sheath. And when you do something like push-ups, that could cause some compression there, so I can see how that would bother her son. Can physical therapy do anything for it? No, not really. You can have them aspirated or drained by a physician. They may or may not come back. So.
Right. Yep. Right. So there's not a lot else to do.
We have Pat in Wisconsin Rapids next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have been dealing with plantar fasciitis in my right foot for about 2 months, and I was just wondering if you could recommend the best treatment, whether it be therapy or taping.
All right, sure. There are all kinds of options for plantar fasciitis. So my recommendation is to see a therapist. And this is why. First of all, it's in one foot and not the other. Almost everything we do in our lives involves both of our feet. So why do you have it in one foot and not the other? Do you know the answer to that?
I'm sure because I'm favoring that side or using that side more often.
Oh, it wasn't a quiz, but but you don't know. You haven't done anything. You don't have a job where you stand on one foot or anything
that.
Okay. Yeah. So typically, and if you are favoring that side, then the question is why. So you don't want this to come back. So the reason you would see a PT is they can look at how you move. They can see if you're favoring it. They can look at your shoe wear to see if there's some clue as to why you have this on your right side and not your left. Sometimes it's a difference in your foot posture. Sometimes it's a leg length difference. So the most important key is figuring out the underlying cause. Then we go and we treat the symptoms. One of our favorite things is the night splint.
Right. Yes. So, and the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy, which is a journal that many orthopedic and sports PT subscribe to through our membership has something called clinical practice guidelines for plantar fasciitis. And somebody was nice enough to summarize all the literature out there to make recommendations about what some of the best interventions that we can do in physical therapy are. And Lori mentioned many of them. One of them is using a splint at night to hold your foot in a neutral position. Because when we sleep and we're all curled up, our toes are kind of pointed down and all of the tissue on the bottom of our feet gets kind of tight. Then we take those first few steps in the morning and it gets that rapid fire stretch and it gets angry. So you can sleep in what's called a dorsal splint, or a splint that goes over the top of your foot and kind of secures your foot up in that neutral position at night.
Right. And then we do some specific exercises to stretch your plantar fascia. There's a specific plantar fascia stretch that you do where you pull your toes back with your ankle in a neutral position. There may be things like rolling a tennis ball to massage underneath it or so on. But typically, the physical therapist who examines your foot would figure out which of the many interventions we have to offer are the right ones for you.
There we go. Thank you so much. Adam on Facebook says he wakes up with sore shoulders and has resulting migraines. And I'm just looking here on my screen and seeing Susan has migraines and wondering if PT will help. Can PT help with migraines?
Absolutely, particularly if your migraines are what we call cervicogenic or from your cervical spine in origin. So there's multiple different kinds of migraines. And if there's some that are due to poor mechanics in your cervical spine, seeing a physical therapist can absolutely help with that. There's no doubt.
And no doubt about it.
Yeah. And Adam with the, let's see, sleeping.
Sore shoulders and sleep.
And he tenses up when he sleeps. Yeah. So that's a problem too, because he's firing. If he tenses up when he sleeps, he's got some tightness in his shoulders, and that can easily cause headaches as well.
Yeah. And if there's something about his posture that's maybe causing him some pain or discomfort that makes him tense up, then we need to talk about sleeping posture, looking at his neck and shoulder mobility, and what's the best way to use pillows to support the neck and shoulders while sleeping so he can relax and not create that tension.
And Judy on Facebook says she broke her finger last year in the middle knuckle. It swelled severely. It's still stiff and swollen. Physical therapy help reduce the size of the knuckle?
We can get her more mobility and maybe make her hand stronger, but cosmetically that size is probably there to stay.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And Marty, we're kind of zipping through a few last things here. Marty in Lake Geneva, his knee feels like it wants to give out when he walks. Could it be arthritis?
Yes, it certainly could be arthritis. Would depend upon Marty's age, if he has a history of injury to that knee. Typically, arthritis doesn't make you want to give out. It's pain that makes your knee want to give out. So if you have pain that's due to arthritis, it could be, but you could also have a meniscus tear that causes acute pain when you step down on it. You could have patellofemoral pain that causes pain and makes your knee feel like it wants to give out. You could have weakness in the muscles of your thigh that are originating in your thigh or in your low back. So there's a whole laundry list of things.
Good thing to see somebody.
See somebody about it and figure it out before he falls and hurts something else.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's always a pleasure, you two, and I see you're back on May 16th.
Yay.
Outstanding.
2 days after my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Will there be cake?
No, maybe there will be. Oh, boy. Lori Tide Brody and Jill Tide Nissenbaum, our guests today. Lori, a physical therapist at the and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. They will be back on May 16th. We'll do it all over again. Jane Hamilton, author Jane Hamilton, comes to the studio tomorrow. She's got a new book out, and it's always fun to talk with her. And thanks for listening. Stay with us.